Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
Your friends don't play fantasy? LOL. What a bunch of nerds.
Let's go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
2 weeks of the preseason down, 2 weeks to go. One of them will be great. One of them is going to be a pain in the butt. But your fantasy football drafts are happening now. They're going to happen next week, and we're here to help you do it. This is the Fantasy Football Today podcast here from CBS Sports. I'm Dave Richard, filling in for our host, Adam Azer, who is getting an appendectomy. And Jamie Eisenberg, Heath Cummings are with me. And we're going to go over week two of the fantasy preseason. But first, a Twitter poll result.
Yes, I love Twitter polls.
Le'Veon Bell, when would you draft him? This is according to Adam Azer's Twitter. He put it up there. He got well over 2,000 votes. He was very excited. My most voted on Twitter poll ever, exclamation point.
What was your most voted on Twitter poll ever?
I did one once where the two options were yes and yes.
Yeah?
So that one got, I don't even remember what it was for. Like, should this guy be drafted? Yes or yes. All right. When would you draft Le'Veon Bell? Picks 1 through 6, picks 7 through 12, picks 13 through 18, or later? Enter your answer at any time. Good, you answered. The leader, Jamie, what would you say the leader was?
The leader was the second choice.
Pick 7 through 12?
No, the third choice.
I'm
picks 13
say,
through
18?
No,
the second choice. The second choice.
Is that when you would take Le'Veon Bell, between pick 7 and 12?
No, I would take him the third
13
one.
Through 18?
Yeah, but I would take him 13 through 15, probably.
I would say 13 through 18 was the winner.
13 through 18 was the winner.
What do we win?
Barely. $1 million each.
Thanks.
40% was the leading vote getter for Le'Veon Bell. So most people are ready to draft him between picks 13 and 18. But picks 7 through 12, just 38%, just 2 percentage points behind. Picks 1 through 6, 10%, later than the 18th pick, which is where I guess I fall, 12%. So Le'Veon Bell is definitely a name that fantasy owners are just still not sure of, but it looks like the suspension down to 3 games, we're going to get that extra game out of him. Definitely is a second-round pick now and potentially a first-round pick. We can also discuss D'Angelo Williams and what he can do and whether or not he should get drafted.
You're still buying that they're going to share time when he comes back?
I think it's going to be a little bit less of a chance now, but it's going to hinge on how D'Angelo does in those first 3 games. But I still believe
he was great in those first 2 games last year and didn't have a role. And
well, they've only got one wide receiver, so they might as well play 2 running backs.
They might.
That
end up
would
doing
actually
that.
Be pretty cool to see them run
Wishbone
with Ben. I would actually enjoy that.
Yeah, I don't know if Ben would enjoy that very much, but it would be fun and it could be something they end up doing because the rest of the receivers, yeah, it's not good. All right. We're going to get right into the rankings, risers and fallers. We're going to start with running backs. And the biggest news, I would say, from the weekend was Deion Lewis having a second surgery on his knee, out 8 to 10 weeks, according to NFL Network. He's already on the PUP list. He's probably going to stay on the PUP list, which means he can't play in the Patriots' first 6 games. That really jives well with his timetable to come back. I believe they're playing at Pittsburgh week 7. I don't know if he's going to be ready for that. I don't know if I feel good about Deion Lewis as a fantasy pick at all. But if you've already drafted him and he's on your team, it's up to you whether or not you want to stick him on your bench or go try and get James White. I would lean toward James White. He's looked good this preseason. And LeGarrette Blount has his role as a rushing downs back, and I don't think he's going to give that up at any point. Jamie, we talked about this before the show started. I think both of these guys are mid-round picks, and depending on scoring, one could go ahead of the other. I think White is the better running back in PPR.
White, in the 7 games after taking over for Deion Lewis, there was kind of a one-game situation where I think they were kind of feeling it out there. But from his final 7 games on, if you project his, he had 43 catches over those 7 games. Project that over 16 games, easily number one in receptions from running backs. The leader was Danny Woodhead with 81. He would have had 98.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what this role has been. Kevin right. Faulk, Danny Woodhead, Shane Vereen, last year Lewis and White. So it's a very tried and true position. Touchdowns are always going to be sketchy, but he had a couple touchdowns in there in those 7 games. So he's a very nice third running back with top 20 potential in PPR leagues and still could be very good in standard leagues also.
How high have you guys moved him up? Because it sounds like you guys have moved James White higher in your rankings than I have. In standard, I don't feel like he's particularly close to LeGarrette Blount. I feel like this is a big boost for Blount, because I was a little bit worried about Deion Lewis getting some of those carries too. In PPR, though, I'll put White closer to Blount, but I wasn't planning on putting him ahead of him.
I currently have Blount, as we're recording this, Blount ahead of White. I just looked at White's numbers as we're recording this. I'm going to move White ahead of Blount in PPR.
Yeah, I did that too. I think these are round 7-8 picks, both of them.
I would take White earlier than that. Depending on how I built my team in PPR.
The nice thing about this is that I think James White is one of those zero RB RBs. So if you start your PPR draft with three wide receivers or a tight end and two wide receivers and you're looking for running backs just to get you off to a good start of the season,
right?
I think White is perfect for it in PPR. Both of these guys in PPR could be pretty good for that role. LeGarrette, I like him a little bit better in non-PPR because his yardage could... He's got a better likelihood to score.
He does, but he also has a better likelihood to sit on the bench and not do anything, as we saw from him at times last year. The thing that's disconcerting about both these guys to a certain extent is you have no Brady for the first four games, so I don't think their running game is going to be special and light the world on fire, which hurts Blount. You also have a situation with Sebastian Vollmer now looking like he may miss the season or the start of the season because of his injury, which really hurts that offensive line. The thing about White that hurts his situation, and you have to factor in when you draft him, yes, zero RB could be a great situation for him, but you also have to factor in season long, if you're investing something early in a pick on him, Deion Lewis could still come back and make this a mess. So if Lewis comes back after the first 6 weeks, now what are you looking at? Do they stick with White, who's been maybe doing what he did seven games and in the playoffs and helping them in that role? Do they go back to Lewis? Or is it, let's take Lewis with kid gloves, who didn't practice throughout the course of training camp, who didn't play in the preseason, who didn't play in the first 6 weeks?
They can't rush him back. They can't.
It's not about rushing him back, though. Or is it after 6 weeks, he comes off the PUP list, they give him the practice time for 2 weeks, so he's not there until week eight. But you know from week five on, this offense should be a monster.
So you're maybe getting 4 weeks of James White with Tom Brady.
I think it could be
less. If that much. Probably 2 to 3 weeks. But still, it's very easy for Garoppolo. We see it, and it's why we've talked about some of these crappy quarterbacks who just check the ball down and look to their left or their right and get the ball out as quickly as they can. Is Garoppolo going to be one of those guys? So it's very easy just, hey, look, there's James White. He's going to get me 6 yards. Why not?
Especially if they're playing from behind, and that's just how the Patriots work, is when they're playing from behind, you're not going to see a lot of Blount unless they're up at the one. And both games this preseason have featured a nice catch-and-run play by James White that sets up a goal to go for LeGarrette Blount to score.
One thing
that's happened in both games.
It was not running back-related that I changed because of this, and I don't know if you guys think that has any impact, but I think this means more targets for Martellus Bennett.
I mean, there was no question.
So I've actually
not if they run the same offense that they've been running, which is.
But we've never seen the Patriots, like, it seems like whenever their pieces change, their system changes. And now that
I don't think the system changes. I think the targets.
I don't think this is a piece changing. James White and Deion Lewis last year were interchangeable. Lewis was just more productive fantasy-wise.
I don't think. Are you even talking about White, or are you moving the conversation to Martellus here?
Well, I think what Jamie's saying is Bennett doesn't get more targets because all of Lewis's targets go to White. I'm saying maybe they don't throw to White quite as often as they did Lewis, and Bennett gets more targets because of this.
But if clearly Bennett was going to impact Lewis or White,
right.
Which you know, that's the, I think, the bigger part of this. If James White plays exactly how he did last year, which was exactly how Deion Lewis played last year, he just didn't find the end zone as much as Deion Lewis.
Right.
James White, again, 43 catches over 7 games.
Right.
You know,
did he do the same?
He averaged like 4.5 catches over the last night.
Was he as good?
He wasn't as explosive. But right. I mean, you just look at his game logs from last year when he took over that role. It was impressive.
Yeah.
And it's hard to look at that and say it's going to be exactly the same. But I mean, you look at the game that he started against Philadelphia last year. 13 targets, 10 catches, 115 yards, and a touchdown. That's Deion Lewis. Now, the other thing I think you look at, this is probably more typical of it's the Danny Woodhead factor. He had 2 carries for 14 yards and a touchdown against Buffalo and 2 catches for 32 yards and a touchdown. Now, Woodhead would have been 4 catches for 32 yards and a touchdown. But you look at the way White started to progress. That Philly game was a jumping off point. Then against Houston, 4 catches, 38 yards, scored a rushing touchdown. Against Tennessee, 7 catches, 71 yards and a touchdown. Now you're starting to see those Deion Lewis numbers. So I don't see it like, okay, Lewis is gone. Who goes where the ball goes elsewhere? I think Lewis is gone.
And it all goes to White.
Yeah, but there was going to be a downtick for all these guys because of Bennett and Hogan, because I think Bennett's an upgrade clearly over Scott Chandler. There's no arguing that. And Hogan should be an upgrade over Amendola, Aaron Dobson, whatever they did.
Those guys are, yeah, it's over for them. And I've noticed that Garoppolo has gotten into a groove with Martellus. Like, Gronk hasn't played in any of these preseason games. Neither has Brady. And we've seen Martellus Bennett, I believe, hit the first five targets or something like that, that Garoppolo threw to him, he caught. They're on the same page. I think Martellus isn't going to take away numbers from the running backs as much as he will from some of these other wide receivers. Last question on this, one-word answer, and I can't believe I'm saying that. Do you draft Deion Lewis?
Deep, deep league, yeah.
Yeah, I think I could see it in the 16th to 18th round.
I think if you've got an IR spot, you can draft definitely. Late and stash
there. Oh, for sure.
And none of us gave the one-word answer.
I think like we did, what was the IDP is 28 rounds. We've done a 22-round draft recently, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe I did. Those are perfect shot in the darks to draft Lewis. And if you've already drafted Lewis in a deeper league, don't cut him yet. Because if it's just 6 weeks, that's still a very manageable situation.
Let's move along to Matt Jones. Separator, AC joint sprain. Looks like he'll be okay for week one. Didn't look that good when he was playing. Had a fumble in the game against the Jets. How do you feel about the Washington run game this point? And is Matt Jones somebody that you don't want any part of it? Are you drafting Matt Jones?
Not where I was. I mean, after two preseason games, I couldn't be more disappointed. So if he falls to me 7th, 8th round, but I know I'm not getting him there.
Who do you like in the backfield in Washington?
Oh, still Matt Jones. I don't want any part of Keith Marshall. Chris Thompson in the PPR league, I'll take late.
What about Rob Kelly?
Yeah, no.
Nothing?
No.
This is a team that I think could add a running back.
They
and
should.
We've talked about it, and Adam even called his shot that this would be Ronnie Hillman's landing spot and that Ronnie Hillman will end up. But this is a situation I think you have to monitor. Matt Jones just hasn't looked good. In the first preseason game, the offensive line looked terrible.
If I'm Washington, I am calling Carlos Williams today.
Oh, absolutely.
He's the perfect fit for them because if he gets back in shape, he's explosive. Mm-hmm. He could play a secondary role, so he could still run Matt Jones out. Look, Matt Jones is still going to have some good games. There's no doubt about it. He had some good games last year. But they just need some explosiveness back there that they could trust. They can't trust Keith Marshall right now.
Carlos Williams got cut by Buffalo.
Yes.
And I don't know if his phones rang yet or not. Apparently he was overweight and he didn't show any commitment to losing that weight. I don't want to talk about
Carlos. No, he was getting back in shape.
Okay, but got cut. Like, the bottom line is that something went wrong in Buffalo that made Rex Ryan tell him adios.
I think the rumor I saw was that he had lost some weight, but then in the last week or so, he'd started trending back the other direction.
It's hard to lose weight. I can vouch for that, but I'm also not an NFL player.
I mean, that was also just talk.
Look, he has a 4-game suspension. There's baggage. He's got a bad offseason. He had a bad offseason. Mm-hmm. That's baggage. And they bring in a draft pick. They had a guy in Gillisley who stepped in for Carlos Williams and McCoy last year that played well. And they signed a veteran guy who, look, we don't like Reggie Bush at 30 years old to help fantasy owners, but he's a good guy to have in the locker room.
All right, so here's the question. I draft LeSean McCoy in round 3 or round 4. Who's the guy I get to handcuff him?
No one.
Yeah, it's a timeshare. There's different guys doing different things, I think, if McCoy goes down. I don't think anybody's worth owning.
I don't think anybody's worth owning either because I don't know if they know. You know what I mean? Like, they talked to Reggie Bush teams play.
They're going to put Reggie Bush in there if something happens to him.
As an every-down guy, if something happens to LeSean McCoy?
No. Like he said, it's going to be timeshare. But it's going to be Reggie Bush to go, and then if Reggie Bush doesn't get going, it'll be Jonathan Williams or it'll be Mike Gillisley. I mean, look, they had situations last year when it wasn't McCoy and it was Gillisley and Williams, and they had situations when Williams was there and Gillisley was still getting work.
Let's talk about another riser among running backs, and it's Jeremy Langford of the Chicago Bears, who has dominated first-team reps with Chicago. He hasn't looked spectacular. A couple of nice plays, but other than that, I think the offensive line there just doesn't do him enough favors. But you can't help but think, here's another running back, 15-plus touches per week, can handle rushing downs, can handle passing downs, is going to be the guy at the goal line. Where do you guys come out on Jeremy Langford, and how excited would you be to draft him heading into this weekend?
I think we were both kind of behind you on Langford and had him, and you basically had him ranked about where his average draft position is, and I've moved him up into that range. I don't know that I've gotten excited about Jeremy Langford because I've not moved him up ahead of where he's being drafted. But if he falls into the 5th, 6th round, then yeah, I'll draft him.
Yeah. The nice thing about him is, and this was the concern for me, I don't care about the metrics that he didn't put up last year, because there are a lot of rookies that don't put up good metrics. He was somebody who produced decently enough when Matt Forte was out last year. Then they go and they get Jordan Howard. And the thought was, it's going to be a more of a shared situation, because they kept Jacquizz Rodgers around. Kadeem Carey played well enough in his small touches last year that he could get a role. But it's still John Fox. He doesn't like rookies. He has a tendency not to use rookies. And you've seen it through two preseason games. It's been Langford in every situation that you look for. First and second down, passing downs, at the goal line. He had the 34-yard run. What did he do? He punched it in two plays later in that preseason game against New England. Don't get overexcited by the numbers of 8 for 55 and a touchdown. Just get excited by his workload. Yeah. That's all you have to worry about. He is not someone you reach for. He is not someone you say, I have to have Jeremy Langford on my team. He said it. Let him fall to you in a good spot.
Round five, early round five.
Round five if there's a lack of good running backs on the board. Round six would be the ideal situation.
Let's define that. A lack of good
running backs. So here's what's happened now. Ryan Matthews, not a safe guy.
Yeah.
Matt Jones, not a safe guy. Deion Lewis is now out of the mix. You can talk about
Matt Forte.
If you like DeMarco Murray or you don't like DeMarco Murray, if you like Matt Forte or you don't like Matt Forte, those guys to me are the tipping points. Those handful of guys. Because I think everybody could look at it and say, look at our rankings and go, Carlos Hyde up. You should feel pretty comfortable about that group. Jeremy Hill, you can put him in that class. I'm fine with it. Perfect. To me, that group. I know, Heath, you're not a Jeremy Hill guy, but I think that's...
No, I'd much rather have Jeremy Hill than any of the guys we're talking about.
Though. Right. Well, you're a DeMarco guy. I mean, obviously you like DeMarco. But I think people look at it kind of that Hyde, Rawls, Hill group and say, after that, there's not a lot of guys I feel safe about. Murray maybe is fine in that group. I'll put him in that group. But then it's kind of, okay, what do you do next? And this is why I think people go receiver early, running back next, and then it's what do I do for my flex? Mm-hmm. And this is where these guys come into play. Do you reach for Melvin Gordon? Do you reach for Jeremy Langford? Do you reach for Giovanni Bernard or Amir Abdullah? Or do you settle for somebody like Jeremy Langford? I think Langford is very good in that group.
I agree.
But I don't think he's in the group in front of him.
Let me give you guys three names. I want you to rank them for me. DeMarco Murray, Jeremy Langford, Matt Forte. DeMarco Murray, Jeremy Langford, Matt Forte. Jamie, what order do you have those three?
I have it right now, Murray, Langford, Forte.
Are you thinking about changing?
No, because I'm still a little skittish about Langford, you know, just because.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of games where he gets 20 touches and 60 yards.
Not a lot.
Maybe some. 65. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
right. Yes.
Heath, DeMarco Murray, Jeremy Langford.
See, I kind of don't know if I've ever explained myself enough about DeMarco Murray. I kind of rank Murray on an optimistic situation for him. I'm not as high on him as you guys are, clearly.
Yeah.
I'm hoping he can rebound, but I am skittish of him getting back to being a productive week-to-week running back after all that work he had 2 years ago. So that's why he's somebody I almost rank by default.
Yeah, I don't put Murray in the same classification as the other two. I've got Forte and Langford back-to-back in standard leagues.
With Forte ahead of Langford.
Spot ahead of him.
Okay.
And then in PPR, I give Forte even a little bit more of a bump. But I would much rather have Murray than either one of them.
I agree. I like DeMarco Murray the best of the three, but I'm not a big Forte guy. I'm nervous about him because of the
injuries
and the workload for him. And so Langford, I've got sandwiched in between the two of them. Let's go rapid fire on some other running backs that are moving up and down the rankings. Let's start in Miami. Arian Foster only had two touches. He couldn't go anywhere on them against the Cowboys. J.H.I. didn't fare that much better. These Dolphins running backs haven't shown anything. And Ryan Tannehill, I think, has actually shown a lot. And I think he's playing really well, and I think he's really taking to this no-huddle offense that Adam Gase is rolling out there. And it's really a credit to Gase if he can get it going. I don't know what kind of workloads these guys will have if they can't just find room to run against anybody. I think he's going to end up throwing the ball 40 times a game.
I did not watch the Dolphins. So my question is this, because I know the offensive line is just pieces moving all over the place right now, and they don't really know who they want playing where.
And Pouncey may miss the first week of the season.
Is this an Arian Foster and a Jay Ajayi problem, or is this a there's no holes?
Well, first off, they haven't been committed to either guy getting the workload you're going to see in the season. That's
right.
Typical in the preseason, so it's really hard to say. And to be fair, it's hard to say with Matt Jones too. He hasn't gotten ramped up.
Well, they don't feel confident probably that they can give those guys 10 carries and one of them won't get hurt.
True. And look, this is Foster's first action since rupturing his Achilles, and first time with a new team. The positive and the negative, positive for Tannehill, negative for the Dolphins. Tannehill did this against a bad Dallas defense. He lit them up, looked great. The Dolphins couldn't do this against a bad Dallas defense. So where do you sort of gauge it? Like, you can't prop up Tannehill and say, great job, Ryan,
when you're ripping apart to everything.
That defense, and then say, well, bad job, Dolphins. You know, so it's you got to kind of take it with, you know, both sides of the equation. I think it's still the same situation with the Dolphins. You let these guys just fall on your lap.
It's round seven for Foster, right? You're not.
Yeah, it's not anything sooner than that.
It might start to be round eight.
I almost hope people, like, we're going to do our auction in 2 hours. I hope somebody spends more than a dollar on either of these two guys.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah. Take Foster for 2, 4, 6, whatever. Right. All yours. I'll bid him up.
Yeah.
Take him. Yeah. Take Ajayi for 2-3 bucks. It's just going to be a mess. You need one to get hurt for them to either one of them to have the chance to do anything successful.
And I'll say this.
That was about his worst rapid fire as ever before.
I know. This is going to make everybody sick, but Isaiah Pede, from the day I went to Dolphins camp, he got hurt that day, but he looked good before he got hurt. And then in this game against backups for Dallas, looked really good.
What about Daniel Thomas?
Daniel Thomas, he's got a good rushing average, but I'm not really excited about him. Alfred Morris looked amazing in that same game against the Dolphins defense, and the Dolphins are supposed to have this vaunted run defense. It wasn't there. Alfred Morris averaged 6.5 yards per carry, looked really good, scored one touchdown, could have had another in the game. It 2 points for me. Number one, it speaks volumes about that Dallas offensive line.
Right.
First, it was Darren McFadden last year. Now it's Alfred Morris this preseason. When Ezekiel Elliott gets right and the Cowboys are doing the right thing by holding him out, man, he might end up averaging 5 yards per carry and having a really solid year. He is worth that first-round pick. You've got to project ahead. You've got to look at the investment and the potential that he's got. That's why I think he deserves that late first-round pick.
There was a period of time after they had Alfred Morris, before they had Ezekiel Elliott, where I thought Alfred Morris was going to have a very good year behind this offensive line. I don't think he's as bad as what he,
Alfred Morris?
Yes.
He's not.
He's not as bad. If he separates himself a little bit more from Darren McFadden, he's going to move quite a ways up in my handcuff rankings.
He should already move.
Because if Zeke goes down,
yep,
and that's not that far-fetched, I don't see any reason Alfred Morris couldn't be a top 15 running back.
No. The thing that saves, and I'll probably start referencing this a couple times, but I got a chance to do an event with John Clayton over the weekend, and somebody asked us this question. John Clayton of ESPN asked us this question. What happens? Who's the backup to look at for Ezekiel Elliott? And this was after the game that Morris just had. And something he said, which I think everyone should keep in mind, Darren McFadden is an Arkansas guy. Jerry Jones is an Arkansas guy.
Yep.
It's going to be very difficult for Jerry Jones to say bye-bye to Darren McFadden after what Darren McFadden did for them last year. So
doesn't mean that he's going to be in there as the number 2 running back, though.
No, but I doubt that, and similar to the Buffalo situation, I doubt that if Elliott goes down, that it's Alfred Morris doing everything that Elliott...
No, I think McFadden would definitely be the pass catcher.
Yeah, somebody would do that. It
I think that's clear. He'd be the pass catcher, but I also think he's going to work on first and second down, too, in some situations. So don't overvalue Alfred Morris, but he is certainly one of these lottery tickets to look for sure. Absolutely. And if I'm the Cowboys, look, I'm on the phone talking to Washington right now. I'm not probably not Washington. I'm on the phone talking to some of these teams that are looking like some bad, the Dolphins. I mean, you know, who knows? If you can get something for Darren McFadden at this point, why not? There's a 1,000-yard rusher from a year ago. You don't need him.
Do you think there's a single NFL general manager that would consider Darren McFadden in trade with a broken elbow? I mean, it just sounds crazy.
Well, he's got to be healthy. But, I mean, if you're the Colts right now, you would take some talent in your backfield.
And Washington would, too. Dallas wouldn't trade him to Washington, but he would. All right.
Colts offered you a 7th-round pick for Darren McFadden?
Oh, of course, in a heartbeat. He's absolutely all yours. And the Colts should do that. That would actually make some sense. I've got to tell everyone about a new, better way to buy and sell tickets online. Used to be a pain in the butt to do it, such a confusing process, but now we've got SeatGeek. I use the SeatGeek app. You should, too. We can save you $20 with our offer code, FFT. See, if I need tickets to an event, the first and only place I go is my SeatGeek app. I'm going to take my son to a college football game this year. We just started looking at the SeatGeek app for some affordable tickets, and it's looking really good. We're going to see the Canes in action. So here's why SeatGeek is the best. It does the researching for you. They search multiple ticket sites, ensuring you get the best possible deal. Then SeatGeek ranks all the available available seats based on value. So you search for an event. SeatGeek finds you tickets. SeatGeek tells you these are your best values. Buy these tickets. It's kind of like us telling you to find a sleeper in your fantasy draft. But even better than that, you get to get $20 back after your first purchase. So to get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. That's where you enter the promo code FFT for Fantasy Football Today. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFT today. That's SeatGeek, SeatGeek. Guys, let's move on to wide receivers. And I'm sorry, I'm taking over right now and getting on my soapbox for Tajae Sharpe of the Tennessee Titans. Watched him play against Carolina, and I am impressed with this guy. Just the things that he's doing. Forget about the fact that he caught 111 passes last year for UMass. In this offense, he's getting all the targets. He's catching them all. He hasn't missed a target sent to him yet, making great plays, adjusting his body to passes that aren't exactly on point from Mariota, running all types of routes. He looks like a veteran out there. And I think if we're talking about a late-round pick, you can't find anybody with more value at wide receiver than Sharp. I think if he does play 16 games, he's got a shot at voluming his way to potentially 70 catches, maybe a shade under 1,000 yards. I'm not going to say he's going to get a lot of touchdowns, but in a PPR league, he's a dynamo. And I think in a standard league, he's worth a late-round pick.
I'm with you in PPR. I don't think he comes close to 1,000 yards in this offense. If they're doing what they want to do, they're not going to throw the ball a ton.
Do you think that they'll be able to do what they want to do?
Well, again, I with John Clayton, he went to Tennessee, and he said if they have their druthers.
Oh, there's no question.
It's 30 rushing attempts for their running backs and then three or four for Mariota. How many plays are they going to run? You know, so
right.
So if they have a chance to stay competitive in games and are not getting blasted, then you're not going to see a lot of pass attempts. Now, I do think Sharp can be a 4 or 5 catch a week guy in this offense, mm-hmm. but that means now Walker is going to get downgraded. If that's the case,
I don't know about that.
I don't see this team getting 5+ catches consistently from multiple guys.
For me, it's a big part of the equation is going to be is Kendall Wright's back right. and okay.
Yep.
If Kendall Wright's back and okay, I'm not very excited about Tajae Sharpe.
That's a very fair point. He's doing this without Kendall Wright on mm-hmm. the field. And so there's a report today, Malarkey loves what Rashard Matthews has been doing. That guy's locked into a role on the field.
Oh, yeah.
I think Sharpe is too, though.
Oh, I agree with you.
Both the outside receivers and
I agree with
slot.
You, but this is not going to be a 3 wide receiver set team. So no, who is the guy
be.
Off the field?
That's right. It's got to be Wright as of now. And if Sharpe struggles
that,
or if Matthews struggles, then Wright comes in. I'm not worried about Kendall
Wright. I think the guy that's the second wide receiver in 2 wide receiver sets is who's the best blocker.
It's not going to be a rookie.
I don't think it's going to be a rookie. I don't know who the second best blocker at wide receiver
probably
is.
Probably Andre Johnson, to be fair.
Yeah.
If you're looking at it from just a roster standpoint, it's probably Andre Johnson.
Right, and I think Andre's going to make the team, but I don't think he's going to be a factor in fantasy. I like Sharp.
I don't
double-digit
think,
round pick. I'm not saying this is a round 7 or 8 guy.
But I would say
put his name in your back pocket.
Certainly better in PPR than standard. The touchdowns are not going to be there for him.
That's true.
Somebody bid $2 on him today?
Dave will.
I'm right here.
Okay.
I might nominate him for $2 and nobody bids $3.
This is a standard draft.
I'll pay $2 right. for him in
no,
an
I'm just,
auction.
I'm just clarifying.
I think he's got a chance. I think his floor is pretty good. I don't think it's 70,005 good, but it could be 6,805. Like, I agree with you on the touchdowns. It's the yardage.
6,805 seems more like a ceiling to me.
No, not to me.
Yeah, I would say that's a ceiling,
too. I think he plays 16 games.
Like, it's interesting. Good. Going back to a guy, and you know, reference him as a faller, is Michael Thomas, who had a great preseason debut and then a very bad second preseason game. That's a guy that's very interesting because I think PPR leagues, the catches should definitely favor Sharp.
Right.
Standard leagues, though, the yardage and touchdowns should favor Thomas because, again, it's bad situation versus talent. And Thomas's situation certainly much better from a volume standpoint. So, you know, in PPR, it's closer. Standard, though, I think I'd still rather have Thomas.
Let's move on to Detroit and the wide receivers that they have. Marvin Jones had another good game connecting with Matthew Stafford. Golden Tate, not so good. He dropped a touchdown. It was kind of a tough spot for him.
But what a throw.
He was kind of diving. Yeah, it, you know what? At first blush, it looked like Stafford was throwing into double coverage and just like a terrible throw. And then they show a replay from the end zone camera. And it's a perfect pass from Stafford. Stafford has looked really good, by the way.
He looks so comfortable.
He does. The question I've got is whether or not he will get a ton of touchdowns. I kind of feel like he's in the same Matt Ryan boat, but we'll talk about that a little later. Have you Golden Tate hasn't done a lot. There's been some reports, obviously, that he hasn't been as consistent as Marvin Jones. Jones has looked good. Nice toe-tapping catch in the game against Cincinnati. Has anyone moved Marvin Jones ahead of Golden Tate in their rankings?
No, but they're two spots off for me.
They're really close for me, too.
They're getting very close in standard. And PPR, I've still got Tate a few spots ahead of
him. Let me drop a projection for you on Marvin Jones. This is just Jones. 75 catches, 950 yards, 6 touchdowns. Now, that might seem like a lot. You might think there's no way.
I don't think that's a lot. I think you can do that.
But this is a Detroit offense. Again, just like Miami, they're going no huddle. They're going to lean on their quarterback. Their run game might be just as bad as the Dolphins' run game. I think Stafford's going to throw a lot. He's averaged 38 pass attempts each of the last 3 years. That does not include his NFL record-setting 727 pass attempts in 2012. So I think Matthew Stafford's going to throw until his arm comes off. And I think Marvin Jones is going to benefit.
Hopefully his arm doesn't come off.
The thing is that why do we keep Golden Tate ahead of Marvin Jones? What is it about Golden Tate that we like?
Rapport.
And I think we still all expect Golden Tate to catch more passes.
I agree.
Like I would be surprised if he has less than 90 catches.
Last year, what did he have? He had over 100, but he only had 800-something yards. And
yeah, over 100 catches.
How many did he have last year?
He was in the 80s last
year.
Did
he? It was 2 years ago when he had the 100?
Has he ever had 100 catches?
Does Golden Tate play football?
Yes.
All right, so maybe I messed up with the receptions.
He had 90 last year and 99 the year before.
Okay, so almost 100 2 years ago and then 90. That's still a lot of catches and certainly a lot of targets.
Yeah, I would expect 90 and probably 1,000, maybe 1,100 yards.
Yeah, and he's playing every down, too. They're both nice number three fantasy receivers. I don't think either one of them is a number two.
I think Tate could be in PPR.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to say that yet. I want to see him kind of step up and make all those tough catches that Marvin Jones has been making.
Right.
And, you know, I'd like to hear a nice positive report on him. In that same game, Tyler Boyd had a touchdown. It didn't come from Andy Dalton. It was from A.J. McCarron, but he continues to look good. And I believe he's got a shot to open the season as a starter opposite A.J. Green. I know Brandon LaFell's got ligament damage in his hand. Do I have that right?
Yeah. That is correct.
Okay. And so I don't know what his status is for week one.
Expected to be back, but not definitively.
And it's Brandon LaFell.
He's not good.
We're not. Well, I mean, listen, he's good enough to be in the NFL, so I don't want to say he's not good. But Tyler Boyd has proven he's good enough to be in the NFL, too, and he's made some nice plays. Where are you guys targeting Boyd? Is he one of those late-round picks?
I like him better than Sharp.
Yes.
Okay.
And not quite as much as Thomas.
I don't like him as much as Sharp because I think Sharp's got a little bit of a higher ceiling, and I still think you're nuts about Michael Thomas being that superstar. But I think I don't know if I'm willing to give Boyd any higher than that 800 yard and 5 touchdown number. Does anybody think he can do better than that?
If there's no Tyler Eifert, then yes, he could do better than that.
I think it's a pretty safe, good place to put him, though.
I think it helps Andy Dalton, too, by the way. Just the fact that he's come along and he's doing some nice things. So he's definitely worth that late-round pick. Is Terrell Pryor worth a late-round pick, staying in the state of Ohio?
Deeper
he had that
league.
Nice catch. In a deeper league, I think so, too. But have you seen anything from him that makes you believe he's anything more than just a go-route type of guy?
Doesn't matter. With RG3, that's all he has to be.
What about when Coleman and Gordon are on the field?
Send them all three on go routes, run Barnage underneath and Duke Johnson in the flat. Who's going to cover that?
It's tough to cover. I agree with
you. Who's going
to
cover that? RG3 is going to cover that because he won't look at the guys underneath.
All right. No, but he has been. I think he actually has been making a conscious effort.
No, he's looked at Barnage in the middle of the field. He hasn't looked at guys on checkdown routes.
I'm getting worried about Duke Johnson.
Yes.
A little bit, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I was just
not worried about Barnage.
No, Barnage is looking better. I think the thing about Duke is, like, going back to James White, like, who's in a better situation? Pass catching downs back for Tom Brady or pass catching downs back for RG3?
I like Duke's chances better of having more success in the running game. And I like Duke's chances better of scoring if he gets the ball.
The sample size we have of a year ago.
That's true.
White was better.
If you knew Deion Lewis wasn't coming back.
Oh, it's slam dunk.
That it's James White.
Yep.
I think you might be right about that. Duke Johnson's 25th in my rankings in PPR. Ahead of guys like Frank Gore, Jonathan Stewart, Chris Ivory. Maybe I've just been drinking too much Duke Johnson Kool-Aid. And I don't think it has to do necessarily with how he's played this preseason. I do know, I think I saw it, that he got banged up in practice.
He did. Hugh Jackson kind of didn't really make him
much
of a
concern. Did it sound like a concussion? Because he had one last preseason.
Maybe.
I mean, he played all 16 games.
Did he? I don't think he did.
I thought Duke did.
I don't recall him playing all 16. But there's also the factor of what happens when RG3 gets hurt, because that's going to happen. And then does that elevate Duke Johnson? It's almost like the same thing with Deion Lewis. Does the Deion Lewis factor hurt James White, or does the RG3 not playing 16 games help Duke Johnson?
It's a dilemma for sure. And I think Duke Johnson should be someone that falls in fantasy rankings, and it's helped out by the receivers there. And it looks like Cleveland's going to have a little bit of an explosive passing offense, but Terrell Pryor is one of those guys that you're going to draft deep. When training camp was going strong in Pittsburgh, Sammy Coates was another one of these guys that was supposed to, at first he started off being, keep an eye on him. And then it was, well, spend a late round pick on him. And then it got real exciting. Go ahead and get this guy in round 10, round 11. And in two preseason games, he's looked like garbage. So he hasn't been able to convert what he's done in practice onto the field. Is that what we should judge him on? Is he still draftable?
I think he's still
draftable. Where do you come out on Coates?
I think he's still draftable. Unfortunately, I'm afraid there's too many people that are going to draft him based on what we were saying 2 weeks ago. And he may go higher than I'd be willing to take him.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, to be fair, he's played two games with Landry Jones.
That's true.
He's not been on the field in game action with Ben Roethlisberger. I would hope that all the positive reports coming out of training camp were Roethlisberger to Coates, Roethlisberger to Coates, Roethlisberger to Coates. That would be the hope. The thing that's troubling is they're resting Marcus Wheaton, and they're playing Sammy Coates. Well, why would you rest one and play the other if the starting quarterback and the other starting receiver is not playing?
Couldn't it be that Marcus Wheaton has a legitimate injury, and that's why he's rested?
I haven't seen anything about him being hurt.
Well, I think they know what they have in Marcus Wheaton.
That's the point, but is that
they're keeping Wheaton,
I'm not sure it's any good,
safe and right, under yeah, wraps,
right,
so that he's ready to go to start the season, whereas they're trying, it's almost a trial by fire with Sammy Coates. They're going out there, they're getting him involved, and he looks the part. I mean, he's a big physical dude, strong, but he just hasn't been able to put up a lot of great plays.
He's going to have some moments this year, there's no doubt about it. The problem is that, I say it like I said last week, you know Antonio Brown's never coming off the field. It appears as if Marcus Wheaton's probably not going to come off the field very much. It's what do they do with their third receiver spot?
Right.
Darius Heyward-Bey, for as much as everybody can knock him throughout the course of his career, he has a job in the NFL for a reason, because he's a good blocking wide receiver. So when this team's running the ball, you can see him on the field, and when they use him as a decoy, they'll take some shots with him. You saw it in the first preseason game, scored a nice touchdown. He can still make a few plays too. So does Sammy Coates crack the lineup enough to warrant being drafted? I would take all the rookie receivers we talked about. Michael Thomas is better than him, better situation. Tajay Boyd is better than him.
Tyler Boyd?
Tajay Sharp and Tyler Boyd, are better than him right now, and I'm going to draft Marcus Wheaton ahead of him. I still have him ranked in my top 60. He keeps falling by the day. So if you want to take Sammy Coates, he's all yours.
I'm that guy. I'm still going to look at him in round
11. And Eli Rogers is playing better than him too.
Yeah, but I'm still going to give him the benefit of the doubt until I see him start to fall out of favor in that offense. And I want to see him with Roethlisberger on the field.
I think
there's a lot of potential there.
That would be nice. You know, and again, to compare him to somebody else who's playing well, who could be the third receiver in a maybe volume passing attack, is Kenny Stills, who had three beautiful plays against Dallas. The second touchdown throw was touchdown catch was Tannehill made that play.
Mm-hmm.
That was a beautiful throw by Tannehill. But Tannehill's looking for him, and he's out playing Devontae Parker right now. And so, like, if you're talking about late round picks, who makes more sense? Sure, Sammy Coates has gotten all the highlights and the headlines, or gotten all the headlines. Kenny Stills has gotten all the highlights.
All right, let's move on to an interesting situation in Houston, where Will Fuller caught that touchdown. I thought it was a good throw by Brock Osweiler,
was.
And Fuller was just at the perfect spot for it. But he's got wheels. And Braxton Miller's look good. And all of a sudden, Houston's got some serious weapons on offense that at first, and certainly on draft day, we were like, well, I don't know.
Jalen Strong's just on the outs there, I guess.
I guess so.
He's fighting to keep the third job right now.
Right, from Miller.
From Miller.
Or unless Miller just kind of has this carved out slot role like we were thinking was going to happen.
Sure, and they still have Cecil Shorts to play that role too.
Are you worried? Jamie, you've already moved DeAndre Hopkins down once in your rankings. I think you moved him down to like six among wide receivers.
Yep.
I moved Dez ahead of him after this weekend because I just think Dez is on the brink of having a big year. I think Romo's on the brink of having a good year. I moved Romo up too. But DeAndre Hopkins, I don't think he's that fourth guy anymore. And we've talked about this. So if he's not the fourth guy, what is he?
Well, he should still be the fourth guy if you believe in him. I mean, you know, don't. Like I just
should
think,
you? Should you even believe in him?
Well, look, last year he had 192 targets. I'll take the under. think that's safe to say. With better receivers around him.
Does he get 170?
And a better running game.
Does he get 10 a game? 160.
If you go on his average from last year, it was a very easy thing to peg. Their defense was miserable. The first half of the season, he averaged almost 14 targets a game. After the second half, when the defense got better, it's that Miami game. After they got blasted by the Dolphins and Lamar Miller ran right through them, which is why they signed Lamar Miller. That second half of the season, he averaged 10 targets a game. He was still very productive. He would have come out around the 10th or 11th best wide receiver. Adam did the numbers for you on their show last week. That's still very good. Because if you're saying, okay, the floor is 11 and the ceiling is 2 because that's where he was in the first half of the season,
right.
Put him somewhere in between. It's why I still have him at 6. You've heard me talk about how I don't target DeAndre Hopkins in that 4-6 range in standard or PPR leagues because I don't think he's in that. I don't think he belongs in that range. He's still a back-end first-round guy for me.
Heath, who are the receivers you've got bracketing DeAndre Hopkins in your rankings?
I've still got him at 4th. So I've got him right behind Beckham, right ahead of A.J. Green. I kind of buy into the fact that they don't need to throw to him in the preseason because they know he's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. I'm not worried about Will Fuller stealing targets from DeAndre Hopkins. If anything, I'm thinking that the fact that they have more weapons may help them move the ball a little bit more efficiently, have longer drives, and get to the end zone more often.
But Bill O'Brien's MO, though, and again, this was when they started playing better as a team, is to run the ball.
Right.
I don't think you're getting the DeAndre Hopkins we saw in the early part of the season over 16 games if Lamar Miller's leading this rushing attack to a top five run situation. That's just the way I view it.
I think 9-10 targets a game is going to be about right for DeAndre Hopkins. And I'm still saying that the big worry is Lamar Miller. It's not these other receivers. These other receivers are, like you said, right. They might actually help DeAndre Hopkins because the safeties can't tilt everything towards Hopkins anymore. Not that that was a problem last year because he was able to beat that a lot of the time. But I think if Lamar Miller's there and he's giving them a much better rushing presence than they ever had last season, that's going to take targets away from everybody. And they probably love that because who wants Brock Osweiler attempting 35-plus passes a game?
I think maybe the better way to sum it up is it's not so much a knock on DeAndre Hopkins. It's that you think Dez is in a better situation.
I can explain it for you.
Dez and A.J. Green are in better situations than Hopkins. It's not necessarily that Hopkins is going to stink. It's that other guys, in my opinion, and for Dez in your opinion, are being elevated ahead of him. And so that, to me, is more attractive than DeAndre Hopkins and sort of settling for him just because he was great last year.
The biggest worry I had with Dez is what happens when Tony Romo goes down. Well, you're seeing it in the preseason. Dak Prescott's looking great playing behind that offensive line.
I totally understand where you're coming from. I think, though, had Dez been 100% healthy last year,
he would have made
Kellen Moore look a little bit better than what Kellen Moore looked like because Dez was playing basically on one foot.
Yeah, I think Dez is in for a big year. So I'm going to tell you how I rank Dez, DeAndre, and A.J. Green. I just did. Dez 4, DeAndre 5, A.J. Green 6. Yep. Can you rank those guys for me, Jamie?
Yeah, it's A.J. Green. I still think he's going to supersede both those guys. Dez 5, but those are my top 5 guys in PPR. Receivers out of the gate.
And then DeAndre follows them at 6. There's nobody in between those guys.
No, if Jordy was 100% healthy, and if Jordy comes out in the third preseason, I don't know if he's going to play, but if he did and looked like he's back to Jordy Nelson, I'd put him ahead of Hopkins too.
All right, Heath, what about those three guys? A.J. Green, DeAndre Hopkins, and Dez.
In standard, I've got it Hopkins, Green, Dez. In PPR, I've got it Green, Hopkins, Dez.
Okay, sounds good.
So you think Green's going to be a target
market? Yeah, I think you'll get a ton of targets. I'm a little bit worried about the Cincinnati offense, just without Eifert and
I think they'll be Tyler okay. Boyd. I think they're 21 really points good. A week without Eifert, and when he's back, I think they're going to be tough.
I almost again, it depends on what you're looking at. For exactly what you just said, that's why I love A.J. Green.
Right.
Will Fuller, late round pick.
I moved him ahead of Treadwell because again, taking a step back.
Treadwell's. I don't even know if he's going to play much.
That's the thing.
Teddy Bridgewater could have some mysterious injury.
Step back from it and said, okay, when I'm looking at these rookie receivers, who's on the field more? Well, it's Fuller over Treadwell. Who's got a similar, if not maybe better, quarterback situation? Osweiler could easily be better than Bridgewater. To me, it's an easy choice. I put Fuller in my top 60 and Treadwell's out.
I kept Kelvin Benjamin right where he was in my rankings, and I'm a big Kelvin Benjamin guy. I think Kelvin Benjamin...
Everyone who is a Kelvin Benjamin guy is a big Kelvin Benjamin guy.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be. He looked good, and I don't think there was a conditioning issue in the game against Tennessee, and he has just that size that dominates against cornerbacks. And as long as Cam Newton throws it in the same, a decent radius around Kelvin Benjamin, he's got a chance to come down with the ball. So I think he's a safe number 2 fantasy receiver. I like him better than Demaryius Thomas.
I wouldn't go that far. But I do think that the thing that is going to hurt him, which we did not see 2 years ago, it's a thing I've been harping on for the last couple weeks, is Devin Funchess is apparently going to be more involved than we saw.
He looked good too.
You saw the Ted Ginn play. That's going to happen a couple times a season. He's going to do something down the field or break a tackle.
He's either going to catch it or he's going to drop it.
He's going to catch it or he's going to drop it. And then you have Greg Olsen. So this is a much more developed receiving core than what Kelvin Benjamin dealt with as a rookie. Could he get back to his rookie numbers? Easily. 1,009 for that guy, he could roll out of bed and do that. But is he only going to be 1,009? Or with the touchdowns, I don't see him going to 1,200 yards receiving. I don't think that's going to happen in this offense with how little they throw the ball.
Do you think that might change, though, between their defense getting a little weaker, the schedule being a little better, and Jonathan Stewart not being as good?
I think they'll throw the ball more than that.
I think they will, too.
Not dramatically. The numbers you threw out about Russell Wilson, 5 to 10% more, I think it's very applicable with Cam Newton.
Let's move to Arizona. John Brown just now back at practice. Larry Fitzgerald with an MCL. He did. Carson Palmer looked terrible against San Diego. And remember, this is
he didn't have his top two receivers.
Played. Yeah, exactly. And Jerron Brown outplayed Michael Floyd. Well, I don't know about exactly.
Wow, he talked you into it.
No. I just glanced over it. No, I still think Floyd is the best one. He was without two of his best three receivers, Heath. We should get that right.
We can all agree on that.
I'm not moving Carson Palmer anywhere in my rankings because I don't think it's fair to judge him based on that game. But what do you do? Do you get nervous about John Brown? And what's your take? I'm not even asking Heath on his take on Larry Fitzgerald because he'll be like top 10 receiver. But
he's 21. Be fair. What do you mean?
Okay, I'm just messing with you. But give me your take, Heath, on John Brown.
Here's the thing. I had said all of last week, and I was nervous when I was saying it, but I'd said all of last week that I'm giving him until week three. If he's really still having these concussion issues by week three, I'm scared to death and I'm dropping him big time in my rankings. I've had him as the number one Arizona receiver. Well, this was really funny how it worked out. Yesterday, I've got my home league slow draft going on, and I'm on the clock. And John Brown's still there. It's pick 80. Nobody wants to pick him because of these concussions. I'm like, well,
it's pick 80.
Let's get on Twitter and see what's going on. And the first thing I see is John Brown cleared to practice. I'm like, yes. And then like
you're on the clock?
Yeah. Like it's a slow draft. There's no real. Well, like 10 minutes later, we start getting these reports from Arizona training camp. John Brown made it through the first 45 minutes of practice and then left. Mm-hmm. And nobody says anything after that. We don't know if it's just that he was only planning on practicing 45 minutes because it was his first practice in a couple weeks. We don't know if he got a headache while he was out there. We have no idea. We still don't know this morning. I'm probably more scared right now than I was last week, but I'm not going to adjust in my... I mean, we're going to hear something in the next 24 hours.
I would hope so.
So I'm not adjusting anything. I ended up just taking Larry Fitzgerald instead of John Brown because I got scared.
What do you think... Let me start over. Do you think that there's a chance that Carson Palmer doesn't deliver this year because of the uncertainty with Larry's health and his age, and maybe he gets banged up, and then John Brown with this concussion, if it's a concussion, if it happens again, does that add a little risk to Carson Palmer and maybe you shy away from him a little bit?
My thought is if two of these wide receivers, any two, are healthy, I feel great about Carson Palmer as a top five or six quarterback.
And they have one of the best fourth receivers in the NFL.
Yeah.
In J.J. Nelson.
So you're definitely not worried about that.
No. I'm sorry.
Yeah, if two of them got hurt, yeah, there's a big concern.
Okay.
Yes, but the bigger concern also for me is if David Johnson is a monster, the attempts have to come down. I mean, there's only so many plays they can run.
Well, he's no DeMarco Murray. I mean, Murray thrashed the Chargers and Johnson.
I feel like the explosiveness of the other receivers, and really Larry Fitzgerald has some ability still in his legs. I think that helps them carry some fantasy appeal. Like, we're not looking for John Brown to be efficient or have volume. We're starting John Brown in any given week because of his chance to catch a long bomb.
I have John Brown ranked almost exactly where he finished last year. I mean, we all do. He's in the early 20s.
He's somewhere in the 20s, like the middle of the 20s. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't expect him. I don't know. I mean, you think he's the best. I don't expect him to take this dramatic leap.
He doesn't have to.
I think the only way he does. Like, is I've got him 19th,
and right. He just has to take a small step forward to be 19th.
Right.
Okay. Let's move on to tight ends because there's not a lot of exciting news on tight ends. Austin Seferian-Jenkins, is he a riser now that there's reports that he's got a chance to work back in with the first team?
Well, apparently Cameron Brate stinks.
Well,
at least that's what he showed.
Right.
So, look, Seferian Jenkins is always going to be their best tight end. It's, do they trust him to be their best tight end? That's the question. And so apparently Dirk Koetter is saying he's doing all the right things in practice. Yep. He's doing what he's supposed to do. And after their mishap this offseason where he threw him out of practice, I think they're starting to realize, well, let's get this guy in the field. So if you drafted Cameron Brate, I'm sorry. If you didn't, or if Austin Seferian Jenkins sitting out there in a league that's deep and you want to pick him up off waivers, please do.
I like their week one matchup at Atlanta. I think there's going to be an opportunity there for whoever that tight end is to be a
streamer.
After
RG3 just lit up that defense, you don't think that?
I think going up against rookie safety Keanu Neal could work out for them.
I think the most important question here is, do we have to abandon Make America Brate again as a team name? You can't use a backup tight end as your team name.
Look, Jameis threw 22 touchdowns last year. 6 went to his tight ends. That's a pretty good ratio if you're looking at the position.
Yeah.
And it was Seferian Jenkins in and out of the lineup because of injury. Brate had a couple touchdowns along the way there. So he still could be one of these guys. It is by no means a comparison. Don't take it that way. But what the Patriots have with their two tight ends, where one guy's going to be somewhat touchdown dependent.
It's a really crappy version of
Brate. Brate could be touchdown dependent and help you a couple weeks if you're stuck.
You're in a very, very, very deep league, and you're drafting right now, and you need to take another tight end. You take Austin Seferian or Ladarius Green?
Seferian. I don't think Green plays.
Depends who I took at my first tight end.
Okay.
Interesting.
If I took Gronk, I would take Green.
That makes sense.
Because you're never going to sit Gronk and you're hoping.
Swing for the fences.
Right. You took Delanie Walker.
Then I'd probably take Seferian Jenkins.
Yeah, that would make some sense. And Ladarius says that he doesn't have any headache issues.
No idea where that came from.
Yeah. I don't believe it.
My favorite part was he's not even sure that he had concussions last year.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it was, really.
I pulled him from my draft board. Like, I can't think of a league that I would be in where I would take him. Even with your scenario,
I took him in our IDP league. And this was after taking him out of my rankings. And Adam yelled at me in the draft room. I took him because he was looking
at Ladarius.
It's 28 rounds. I mean, look, if the guy plays, it's an easy...
He'd still be draftable in Scott Fishbowl.
I did. Yeah. Unfortunately, I did draft him.
Right. <Yeah.
laughs> You didn't take him in round 20 or whatever.
No,
it was.
No, it's a very, very disconcerting situation. And it's funny. This happened to me last year in our two quarterback league, and it's happening to me again. So we do that draft early because we obviously want to help our listeners. I drafted last year Kelvin Benjamin. And I forget somebody else who got hurt before the season even started. This year, Deion Lewis and Ladarius Green are on my roster in that team.
Not so good. Not so good. On the Saturday night Ion Fantasy Football show that we do on CBS Sports Radio, it was our first one last Saturday. If you missed it, shame on you. But don't worry, there's going to be another one this Saturday and every Saturday thereafter that we're going to be on.
I better set my schedule.
Yeah. 10 p.m. Eastern. We got a call about Virgil Green. And whether or not he was going to matter. And I understand that he's had a good preseason, but you look at what he's done in his career, 2 touchdowns in 72 games, never really was a great threat. In that
never had a chance,
offense.
Though.
That's true, but I always feel like he's been known as a blocking tight end more than he has been a pass-catching tight end. But the numbers are what they are in the preseason games. I'm not ready to put him high in my rankings. I'm not ready to draft him. I would take whichever Bucks tight end is going to be the better Bucks tight end, or between him and them, rather, and Virgil Green. What do you guys think? Is he draftable?
He's in my top 20 of tight ends, and I would take him over both Bucks tight ends at this point. I look at his situation as Gary Kubiak's tight ends have always had a chance to be productive. And last year it didn't materialize because Owen Daniels was 1,000 years old and broken. This guy is going to play with a quarterback that is not going to throw the ball down the field. Whoever it is. Sanchez, Simeon, Paxton Lynch.
Paxton Lynch could be that guy.
He could, but I don't expect it to happen. Mm-hmm. So bootleg rollouts on play action, which is Gary Kubiak's tried and true situation. You have to account for Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. He's going to have an opportunity for some targets. So I don't think he's going to be a week-in, week-out starter for your team. But I would not be surprised if he has some very good moments. Look, he's one of these former basketball players that's converted to playing tight end. He's got a ton of athleticism. And he just is good enough to make people's computers go crazy. So I think you can see Virgil Green just have some interesting moments. But, I mean, once you get past like the 13 or 14 guys that we all kind of consensusly, and not just the three of us industry-wise, have ranked.
You're grasping at straws.
You're
anyway.
Grasping at straws. And so... Look, I would love to see Seferian Jenkins distance himself from Cameron Brate, then I would easily take him over Virgil Green.
Yeah,
but right now, I'm
up.
Taking Green just because I think he's going to have the job and it's going to be a good situation.
Would you even consider him as a streaming option knowing that week one he's playing Carolina at home?
No.
Week two, he's got Indianapolis at home.
That's a better situation.
I agree. But I don't know if I want to draft him for week two and not week one. I'd rather try and grab him off waivers after week one.
Anybody
and
who's
then I
drafting,
have to draft him.
Anybody who's drafting the tight ends we're talking about, and throw Vance McDonald in there because he had a good preseason game, mm-hmm. and he's got an opportunity.
Clive Walford
and Zach Miller. And
who hasn't even played yet.
And whoever else is in that. Jimmy Graham, if you want. You know, anybody that's
we know his name.
Anybody that's looking at two tight ends. Why? What's the point? Unless it's a deep league. Why?
Right. Yeah, I understand. You got to look at that schedule and see if there's some reason why you would want to have that. So the wait is almost over. Football's almost back. And that means daily fantasy football on FanDuel.com is almost back. And FanDuel is better than ever. You want five free entries? You want to play at FanDuel? Give it a shot. Sign up at FanDuel.com/CBS, as in the network. And it's not just a new season at FanDuel. It's a whole new era. They've upgraded your entire experience with real improvements for everyday fans. Every week on FanDuel, you can have a new team. You just stay under the salary cap, set a lineup, and have all the fun that fantasy football has to offer. And we can't wait to play at FanDuel. We'll be setting multiple lineups every week. We really enjoy it. And we can't wait for the upgrades this season, like beginner leagues, friends mode. Friends mode is cool. You're going to play just against your buddies. It's going to be really, really awesome for you. And there's a special offer for new users. If you deposit today, you'll get five free entries into NFL beginner contests. You'll get one free entry a week, 5 weeks in a row. So you've got the first 5 weeks of your season covered. You'll be playing on FanDuel, and Carlos Williams won't because he's going to be suspended for 4 of those 5 weeks. Finish anywhere in the top half of those free contests.
He can still play it on
you
FanDuel.
No, he's suspended.
He could still play on FanDuel.
Yeah, he just can't play football.
Right.
Go to FanDuel.com/CBS.
I'm going to start a buddy group with Carlos Williams.
FanDuel.com/CBS for five free entries. All right, we've talked about running backs. We've talked about
wide
receivers.
I'll play you for a hamburger.
I'm giving up cheeseburgers. I was tempted last night.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about Carlos.
Oh, I thought you were talking. You know, I hear hamburger and I get excited. Running backs, receivers, tight ends, we talked about them. Quarterbacks. I'll ask this open question first. Has anybody moved into your top 12 that wasn't in your top 12 5 days ago or less? Have you moved anybody new into your top 12?
No.
I think it was more than 5 days ago that I moved Matthew Stafford into my top 12.
All right. So both of you guys are really buying into Matthew. And I knew you already had him in your top 12, right, James?
Yeah, I mean, it's just I can't keep saying he's going to lead the NFL in pass attempts. He's going to do all this. The Marvin Jones report.
You can lay it out by looking at his last numbers. There's nothing that says that he's going to all of a sudden be a handoff guy.
No.
I think that that's a team that will throw a ton, and the volume there is going to mean a lot of yardage for him.
Yes.
But he's done it before, and the touchdowns still haven't been there.
I'm going to look it up real quick, but I was curious just because John Clayton said this, that he – and this kind of shocked me. He said he's going to be the next highest-paid quarterback in the NFL.
Well, I mean, the Lions can't let him go.
He said he's going to top Andrew Luck's contract because of how the salary cap keeps escalating.
Yeah. And he's in a contract year? That's interesting.
That's what I'm going to look up.
Now, he was also a former number one overall pick, so he's already gotten a nice contract. And I believe it was before Cam was in the league, so he got one of those big contracts.
Next year is his final year. So.
All right. So, but he could also play the holdout game or whatever.
Well,
he's got plenty to play for. Plus, he wants to, you know, win football games.
Only 28 years old.
That's
so
shocking, considering how long he's been in the league.
It just seems like he's been around forever. So, look, if he has the type of year that he could have with the volume being there, he doesn't have to be number one in pass attempts. He's still going to be in the top 10. I'd be surprised if that's the case. And this receiving core is looking like a good receiving core. Again,
it looks suitable. It doesn't look like it's going to let him down.
Right. There's not a Calvin Johnson, but there's three serviceable guys, and we haven't seen Ebron yet. There was a report over the weekend that Ebron should be back for week one. We also, to be fair, haven't seen Amir Abdullah, and maybe Amir Abdullah does start to play like the guy we saw at the end of last season, and that materializes into some.
No. If we like Matthew Stafford, we don't want that run game to do well.
They have to still run the ball. Theoretic got hurt.
They got away from it a little bit last year.
He averaged over 4.2 yards per carry. And so if you get that guy, finds the end zone a little bit more, he's going to be a good fantasy back, but he's good for this team. And so there's a good chance for him to play well. And I think also Tyrod Taylor has a great chance to play well, too, because he looked good in that game over the weekend against the Giants, and that was without Sammy Watkins.
12 of 17 for 171 yards. That's 10.1 yards per attempt, 70.6 completion percentage, no turnovers. He does have a fumble lost. No touchdowns yet this preseason, but he really should have had one when he threw to Golden Tate on the play that we referenced earlier. Heath, name a quarterback you moved Stafford ahead of in your rankings.
Just very recently, Ben Roethlisberger. I've got Stafford at 9. I've dropped Ben down to 10. There's a couple of reasons. One, I think Stafford has a more diverse group of weapons, especially at the beginning of the year. I don't know who Roethlisberger is going to throw to other than Antonio Brown. And then more importantly, I think through as the year goes on, Stafford's going to get a lot higher volume, not just because his team has to throw the ball more, but because they're running that fast-paced attack. I think they're just going to run more plays than the Steelers do.
Can we just do the projection game for a second? And maybe we've done it before, and I'm sorry if we have. How many touchdowns do you think each of his pass catchers can get? Because the problem I've got with Stafford isn't the yardage.
Okay.
It's not the attempts. It's the touchdowns. Because he's had some of these years where he's throwing and throwing and throwing, and he doesn't get you to 30 touchdowns. Now, he had the one where he got you to 40 touchdowns, so when you take the average, it looks really good. Let's see if we can find a way to get Matthew Stafford over 30 touchdowns.
We had 32 last year.
Right. And then the 41 was when Calvin had 16.
That was back
in
the last
11. Year, Calvin had 9 of the touchdowns last season. So, again, same thing. Marvin Jones, I laid out 6 touchdowns as a projection.
Am I
too low? What do you guys think?
I'd go 8.
Should we call 7?
I almost
8.
I don't know where it's going to come from, but I would say probably 25 plus are from his 3 receivers and his tight end.
I feel like he could almost get 7 each from Tate and Marvin. Does that sound fair?
14 between the two of them.
And then, like, 5 or 6 from Anquan. I'll give Anquan 6.
I prefer to go low, to be honest with you, just to see where it goes.
Okay, so let's give...
So that's 20 from his receivers.
20 from his 3 receivers.
I would say 5 plus from Ebron, so I'll say 5.
From Ebron.
He had 5 last year.
They're going to have a couple running back touchdowns in the passing game.
I figure between the running backs and all the other supporting cast members, there's got to be 5 touchdowns.
Though. Right.
Yeah.
So and he can run them in.
He ran for 2 last year.
So maybe he can get just over 30 touchdowns.
I believe he's run for 1 at least.
I think so, too.
The last 3 years?
4 years, yeah.
Yep.
4 years in a row he's run for a touchdown. All but one of his career, one of his years in the NFL has failed to run for a touchdown.
So we're at 30, right?
That's 31 if we're including the rushing touchdown, which we should. So I'm going to give you some quarterbacks. You tell me if they've got a shot.
Well, I think the Roethlisberger one is interesting.
Yeah, that's the first name I was going to say.
That I struggle with. Because I think Ben's numbers by the end of the season will be better because of his highs and lows. And when his highs are high, he's amazing. I mean, we saw it two years ago. Two straight games of 6-plus touchdowns. But when his lows are bad, they're bad.
Right.
He's gone 13 of 28 games, only 13 of his last 28 games with multiple touchdowns. That's a bad ratio.
And you have to say he's much more likely to miss a game.
Yeah.
Roethlisberger?
I don't buy into that. He's 2 of the last 3 years he played 16 games. He plays through injuries. He's always getting hurt.
Right.
Last year was the first time in 3 years that he's actually missed time.
Do you feel like Andy Dalton has no shot at 30 touchdowns?
No chance.
And so that's why you can put Stafford ahead of him. What about Jameis? Because he hasn't had a bang-up preseason.
I think Jameis
had a nice touchdown to Mike Evans.
I think Jameis will be close.
I'd say 26, 27.
I think Jameis can get to 30 with the rushing touchdowns, though.
Course he can. He was at 27 last year.
Right, of course. So it's not going to take much for him to get there. And I think
I think Jameis can get there. I think Stafford's yards will be better.
I agree.
And I think Jameis will have more interceptions because he's younger.
That's true. And what about Romo? Is he a lock for – I think he's a lock for 4,000 yards if he stays healthy. 30 touchdowns from Tony?
Another guy whose volume is just a real, real concern.
Right.
The Cowboys are not going to play fast. The Cowboys are not going to throw the ball a high percentage of the time.
But the efficiency is going to be through.
The last time we saw Romo with this type of running game, which coincides with this offensive line being as elite as it is, he was so efficient that he didn't need to be a volume passer. So – I think they're in a very similar situation. I think Romo's just a little bit safer because you know what he has around him.
So you've got Romo ahead of Stafford.
Right now for me, it's Roethlisberger 10, Romo 11, Stafford 12.
Heath?
I've got Romo behind both Ben and Stafford. He may get to 30, but I'd take the under.
I've got Ben, Romo, Stafford, and I feel a change coming. I feel a change coming. I think that'll change for me and hopefully for you guys in your fantasy rankings listening, wherever you guys are right now. Tyrod Taylor looked pretty good. Buffalo Bills, Sammy Watkins is there, big target for him. And Tyrod, of course, can run. Has he moved up in your rankings at all?
He's 13th for me.
I can't put him ahead of that group that we just talked about.
Yeah, I have the exact same problem.
I'd like to put him in the top 12, but I can't.
In 4 point for passing touchdowns for me, he's ahead of those guys because he will run.
Because he'll run for a few.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. But he hasn't moved up necessarily.
He's moved to the 13th for me.
This past week?
With Watkins getting back in the practice field, that's when I moved him ahead.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see how he plays in that third preseason game. I think that that could be something that can really make a move happen and put him ahead potentially into your top 12, Heath, and certainly closer to my top 12. I've got him 17th. I'm pretty unpopular for that, but Tyrod Taylor is just somebody that I'm not as comfortable with compared to some of these other guys. For example, Ben, Romo, Stafford, they're all ahead of him.
So you have Tyrod ahead of Bortles too?
Yes.
Yep.
That's actually – Bortles is 14 for me.
Okay.
I wanted to talk about that because I know it wasn't pretty, but Blake Bortles has had a statistically a good preseason.
He's looked I thought he looked better in the first game throwing the ball than he did in the second game. I thought the second game –
Second game was a little more shaky. Yeah, absolutely.
This has been my contention. What we're seeing from him is how I think they're going to play. You haven't seen the mistakes from him. He's got bailed out a little bit, but I think you're going to see a better team, which they've looked a better team. They've been, again, preseason, but their defenses look better. They've run the ball more efficient, and he hasn't had to be this wild guy in the end of games throwing the ball all over the place.
Is that the worry, or is it that eventually the bad shoe will drop and these wobbly ducks that he throws or the errant passes that he throws get picked off?
Well, he's going to have a game where that happens.
That's just the natural way he plays. He's a young guy coming into his own. I mean, he's going to take some chances because he's got some very good playmakers around him. But I just think that 35 comes down closer to 25, and I think the rushing comes down because he's not going to play as wild. And I think the interceptions hopefully come down with it, which helps his cause. His passer rating should go up. His completion percentage should go up. And they're not – I said this months ago. Gus Bradley, if they have the opportunity to kick a field goal as opposed to in the fourth quarter when they're down 10 points or more.
Because it's a closer game. Because,
yes, he's going to be more conservative. That's his nature.
Yeah, and I think he's also is in that Matt Ryan, Andy Dalton situation where – any of those three guys, if their number one gets hurt, they're maybe not top 20 quarterbacks.
Oh, there's no question. But, I mean, you could say that for a lot of guys.
Nobody else. I don't know. I don't think Tyrod falls out of the top 20 if Sammy Watkins doesn't play. I was ranking him 17th, 18th when Watkins was hurt.
I wouldn't want to start him if he doesn't have Sammy Watkins.
Sure.
Aaron Rodgers is proof positive of that. He didn't have Jordy Nelson last year.
He was still top 10.
Yeah, but he wasn't what you expected him to be.
Of course. There's only a few guys. That's an interesting question. Like, Cam wouldn't really change much because we saw it last year.
Right.
I don't think that you would see a change much for Palmer because he has such a...
Because it's other
deep,
guys, yeah.
Right, other right. guys.
You could almost say the same thing for Breeze.
Luck?
Yeah.
Yeah, without T.Y.?
And especially what they're talking about, you know, more short area passing.
Mm-hmm.
For Breeze, yeah. Breeze, I mean, look, if Cooks goes down, there's still enough mouths to feed there.
Right.
Yeah. I love what Bortles has around him. I think Allen Robinson is legit, and you guys obviously do too. I think Allen Hurns is better than you guys give him credit
for. No, I think Hurns is good. I just think he comes down. I mean,
touchdowns isn't going to
happen. Nothing about him not being good. He's one of, I would say, look, their receiving corps, you could put them up there with the best of the best.
And it's not just those two guys. Like, I think there's so many guys on that team that can make a play after the catch or be a factor in the red zone.
Now, you don't. Do you have
that
Hurns?
That surrounds Bortles well.
Do you have Hurns over Marvin Jones?
Yeah.
Do you? Okay.
But they're close. The difference to me between the
two. He was better than what Marvin Jones could do this year. So that's the thing in his favor.
You know what's interesting about Hurns? Because I just wrote this again. In the seven games where Julius Thomas came on healthy last year, Hurns was not good.
What was he?
He had two games with double digits and fantasy points.
And everything else kind of fell apart.
I had Hurns ahead of Jones at the start of training camp. I've since moved Jones ahead of Hurns just because I think Jones is more of a 1B in that offense, where Hurns is definitely number two. He's not getting – I think Jones gets more targets this year.
Yeah.
And again, I think volume comes down. So he may still score 1 per 10, but that 10 is not going to be as high as it was.
Plus, Jones has a lot better quarterback.
He's got a quarterback that will certainly throw more passes.
Bortles is going to be very good. He's not going to be great. That's just my
question. I think he's going to be top 10 good, not top 5 good.
I don't think he's going to be top 12 good. I think he's going to be top 15 good. Mm-hmm. So, look,
hold on. We did a draft on Friday where I got him at 163rd over.
Well, keep in mind, I'm never going to draft two quarterbacks if I don't have to.
Right.
Especially
but you
in
made
draft.
Your choice to go with somebody else over Bortles.
Yes, because I like 13 quarterbacks better. So, if I can't find 13 quarterbacks in a 12-team league, I'm having a problem. Mm-hmm. You know he's not drafting him, and you know the guy he shares a brain with, and Chris Towers, is not drafting him. So, there's two... three owners right there that aren't drafting him. And most people aren't inclined to take two quarterbacks anyway. So you're the only one of the three of us who haven't ranked in the top 12. So if they're looking at my rankings or Heath's rankings, they're seeing other guys better than him.
Right. Or now, if they just want to stick with one quarterback. Like
I don't think it's a problem at all if you draft Brady to pair him with Bortles, and you would probably, based on where you have him ranked, would agree to a certain extent. There are guys you have ranked ahead of him, but he's still in your top 17, right?
18? Yeah, I've got him 16th.
Okay, so we're not far off. I think the problem becomes is and his average draft position. I looked at last night. Down. He's not the sixth best quarterback on our set anymore.
Right.
I think he's down to 8. So he's starting to.
That's where I have him ranked.
He's starting to. He may be lower than that, but he's in that range. He's right around 8.
I think he's 8th overall and maybe 9th on our site now. Is that right?
I'll check right now. Our average draft position is starting to reflect. No, he's fallen further than that. He is now behind Rivers and Manning. So he's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So he's closer to where I have him ranked, further from you and still further from you. He's actually, you know, now, and I think this is the coolest part of our average draft position, the arrows are starting to reflect the movement.
Mm-hmm.
He's down. He's the only quarterback of the top 12 that has fallen, and it's amazing because his preseason has been good. But his number.
It's just this reputation that he's got.
His number.
The expectation.
First off, he was too high. So that's part of it. His number.
We can all agree with that.
His number was baked in too high at the sixth spot. But he's fallen. And the interesting thing about it is that all these other guys have moved up. Like the two biggest guys that have moved up the most, Eli Manning's gone up 63 spots because this is also, and we're seeing quarterbacks in the first round now again,
mm-hmm.
because this is two QB leagues taking hold too. So Eli's now gone 63 spots. He's risen. Phillip Rivers has risen 50 spots. Derek Carr, 42 spots. Jameis, 38 spots. Stafford, who was woefully underdrafted, 54 spots. He's up. So you're starting to see all these guys now. This is typically what we see in a fantasy draft. A quarterback in the first round. Rodgers has elevated from the third round to the second round. And Russell Wilson and Andrew Luck have settled into third round picks, which is where I think you're going to see it. Cam is going 9th overall.
I still think Bortles gets there. I still think the numbers are going to be there. But the bottom line is this. There are so many quarterbacks that you can just wait for on draft day and feel good about. As your starter, you could even potentially get two of them. And I think Bortles is one of those quarterbacks. As much as I like him, I would still want to get a second quarterback with him, just in case. That would be something. Has any draft strategy changed for you guys since through the first 2 weeks of the preseason? Is there anything about the zero RB or waiting on a quarterback or starting with three receivers? I guess that's zero RB. Starting with multiple running backs. Has any of you changed anything about any draft strategy?
The only thing that's changed for me is doing certain things with different people. Because when I was doing three receivers to start my drafts, mm-hmm. and it happened this past Friday, we did our PPR draft. What I did earlier, a month ago, starting with Antonio Brown and two receivers, because the guys I liked are now going sooner.
Oh, they are for sure. Yeah.
And that's the problem. Like, if you would tell me what I had a month ago when I was taking Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, and Keenan Allen in my first three picks,
yeah.
and now I'm taking Antonio Brown, T.Y. Hilton, and Sammy Watkins, I don't like it as much.
I'm ending up in this situation where our last two drafts now, I haven't taken a wide receiver in the first four rounds, and it's because of the same thing you just said, especially that last draft. I mean, I was the 12th pick. I think there were 10 wide receivers taken in the first round or something, 9. And I just, I'm not going to take Alshon Jeffrey in the first round.
Right.
So, and then we get to the third and the fourth
and there's
all the number two
value.
Wide receivers are gone.
Right. Right.
I'm like, what's going on
here? I think, you know, and we didn't talk about this draft, but the nice thing for you is, because you did it two drafts in a row, essentially, with an IDP draft and this. Now, that's a three-receiver draft. You start three receivers and a flex. This is a two-receiver draft. It shows the difference because
Fitzgerald,
the guys that you started, you're comfortable with starting as opposed to starting Tyler Lockett, Josh Gordon, and Kevin White. I mean, that's a much dire scenario compared to what you have.
Oh, that's why I had to draft 9 wide receivers in the IDP draft. And this one, after I got Decker and Fitzgerald as my starters, I was like, yeah, maybe I'm behind at wide receiver, but I feel okay about that.
I have a draft, and there are people that are in this league that listen to our podcast. It's a team I share with my brother-in-law. We have the first overall pick. We're taking Antonio Brown. I'm pretty confident that I could get away with getting closer to the three receivers that I would want to take in that draft compared to what I just did on Friday.
Right.
And so, I came out of that draft, and I'm like, oh, God. I like Sammy Watkins, and I like T.Y. Hilton. I want that to be my third guy. I don't want both of those guys to be my second and my third.
But you'd be okay with that. You mean your first and your second?
No, my second and my third, because I took Antonio Brown first.
Okay.
Oh, I'm okay with it. I would have done it if I'm not okay with it.
Right.
But when I go three receivers, I want to get three of my top 12 guys. I don't want three of my top 15.
Right. But that's a lot better than three of your top 24, which is what a lot of other people.
Well, I wouldn't
have
done it. But I'm saying what's changed.
Mm-hmm.
What's changed is that the way that the landscape has gone and doing it with you two and 9 other of my colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm doing it with 11 of my friends, they're still thinking differently. We're all talking about the same thing over and over and over again. You know,
we're,
so it's just
almost like we're drafting in a vacuum.
Right.
All right, let's get to some emails to wrap up the rest of this podcast. Let's start with one from No Name and No City. Where's he from, Dave? And what's his name? It's Claude from Grand Junction, Colorado. Yo, Steve, Chevy, Eddie, and John.
Those are old Saturday Night Live cast members.
Perfect. I've been listening to you guys preach about waiting on a quarterback for years. I never really have, but this draft season, you just about had me converted. Then I see three of you taking elite quarterbacks in round four of the most recent 12-team PPR mock. What's up with that?
That is waiting on quarterback.
That absolutely. Absolutely Rich? It is. Do you still have the draft averages for quarterbacks open on your computer? Would you mind telling everybody where Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers, where those guys
Newton is ninth overall right now. Rodgers is 17th overall. Russell Wilson is 25th overall. And Andrew Luck is 30th overall. Those are the consensus.
And are there arrows on those guys?
They're maybe all pointing up.
So they're moving up just like every other quarterback. Well,
I just know the top two. Cam, up until this past weekend, was 22nd overall. So he's moved up from 22 to 9. And Rodgers was 29 overall. He's moved up to 17.
Okay, so if I'm getting one of those quarterbacks in round four,
I'm happy.
When their draft average is top 20 overall picks, I'm very happy.
And I'll say this. I did this purposely where I did not want to take a running back. Yeah. So my first five picks were three receivers, quarterback, tight end. I would not have done it if I wasn't trying to do something specifically.
I would not take – in the fourth round, I wouldn't take any of the quarterbacks besides Cam and Rodgers personally. But I still think that's like that is still waiting at quarterback compared to what everybody else is doing.
You got
to
make it feel like it's a steal. This is from a Dallas fan in Pittsburgh. Dear Jamie, Dave, and Heather.
Autocorrect.
That's a low blow.
It was autocorrect.
Can I win with this team in a 14-team league? Receivers, Sammy Watkins, Amari Cooper, Michael Floyd. Running backs, Doug Martin, Thomas Rawls. These are just the starters. Tight end is Dwayne Allen. Amir Abdullah in the flex. His bench has Devontae Parker, Charles Sims, Kristen Michaels, Sammy Coates, Chris Hogan. His defense is Arizona. His quarterback, Jameis Winston.
Well,
first of all, one thing that I always like to do when I'm judging a 14-team league is to think about, could this team be good in a 12-team league? The answer to this question is no way. Is it good enough for a 14-team league? I'm going to say no. The receivers are great.
You could make the playoffs.
A lot of things have to break right. I'm glad you've got both Seattle running backs, but I feel like there's probably some better teams in that league. Jamie?
I wasn't listening. Sorry. Adam's yelling at me that we're taking too long.
All right. Last question then. It's from Matt in L.A. Hey, Larry, Curly, Moe, and Curly. I see you guys and most other places have a lot of unproven guys ranked ahead of a lot of proven guys, especially at running back. And he gets into David Johnson and Todd Gurley. They're second-year guys. Zeke has never played a down of football. Lamar Miller is on a new team and a new system. But guys like Jamaal Charles, LeSean McCoy, Eddie Lacy are way down comparatively in draft boards. To me, says Matt, they feel like safer options than backs with such a small sample size of success. Good alliteration there. I keep seeing Zeke and Gurley falling to me in the first or Lamar Miller in the second, and they scare me. So can we talk him off the ledge about taking one of these quote-unquote unproven backs? And I guess we don't have to put quotes around it for Ezekiel Elliott. But the unproven quantities versus the guys who have been there for a while.
I think that my rankings probably agree with him, so probably not.
Where do you have Ezekiel Elliott? Do you have him behind Jamaal Charles, Eddie Lacy?
I have him behind Jamaal Charles.
Okay.
I have him.
What about LeSean McCoy?
And I have him behind Lamar Miller, too.
Okay. I've got him behind Lamar Miller.
Yeah. I've got McCoy 12th, so I have him well behind all those guys.
Where do you have Ezekiel?
Sixth, I think. Okay. Fifth and sixth, standard in PBR.
Jamie, I feel like you've been on Ezekiel Elliott the
most. He's fourth for me.
Can you just break down real quick why you love him?
The offensive line.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Good opportunity, and you just saw Alfred Morris kick butt behind it. And I'm a Gurley guy. I think that he's going to continue to play well. We saw him score against Kansas City in the preseason game. Every run he had was impressive, just not, you know, a highlight reel type of run. I'm getting the high side. We're done here. We're going to be back tomorrow to discuss other stuff. We're doing an auction today. Maybe we'll talk about it. But we'll join you tomorrow to talk about your fantasy football teams and get you ready for your drafts. Pretty soon we're going to get you ready for week one here on CBSSports.com. For Jamie Eisenberg and Heath Cummings, I'm Dave Richard. Thanks for coming out.
You didn't nazer it.
Bye.